but there were two other items, one of them I guess now being discussed involving the homeless services center, family shelter expansion, I suspect it is, and then another one. You want to give us an update on that?
Yes, Mike Premack, council member Mark Premack, has introduced something called an equal benefits ordinance, which is...
That's the fifth item, which I actually didn't mention.
That's right.
His way of getting gay support.
It's also a very good idea to do something like this when the economy is weak, because contractors are a lot more flexible about adjusting their own rules to get contracts. So this is the perfect time for it.
Questions: will they include homeless people as a protected category? I think not.
Well, if homeless people contract with the city, and the city has a requirement that all contractors provide equal benefits to their domestic partners that they provide to spouses. And what equal benefits means is if they don't provide any benefits at all, it can be the same level. If they do provide benefits, they have to be the same. Yes, then it will...
Discrimination clause against people who happen to be homeless. Contractors of the city shall not discriminate against homeless people in terms of employment.
I wouldn't mind seeing that one bit.
Me neither. But don't hold your breath today.
I promise I won't. Yes, because I would rather remain around to be active in affordable housing for just a little longer than...
Like David Silva, who's held his breath for far too long and got punished for it. Here's the notorious Jack Hayne, the risk assessment man, quoted in the Santa Cruz Sentinel recently.
Give out money.
We can't
out
spare change.
$100,000 here and a $200,000 over there.
And that's perhaps as close as a statement we're going to get at this time from Jack on the issue of the Blue Lagoon situation.
Well, remember when they wouldn't give out $35 to poor Robert Steffen when he had his was taken into a custody on a, I think, a psychiatric hold?
Robert Steffen was the man in the, who lived in the bag downtown on Pacific Avenue.
And he very conservatively estimated the value of the item forever at his $35 and made a claim against the city. And Jack Hayne wouldn't prove it.
As I said to you in the second part of our interview, which you may have run on your show yesterday, I was busy at Pride all day, so I didn't hear
it. Did it on Thursday.
Oh, okay. But
I haven't run the first part.
I think, in my view, that the Fifth Amendment of the Bill of Rights prohibition on taking property without just compensation ought to apply to everyone, including the homeless. And one thing I'm very glad about in the last few years is that the courts have begun to more seriously and more stringently interpret the just compensation clause.
And not as far as the poor goes in terms of the police. The police now get even more immunity from what they do, regardless of who they do it to or how carefully they do it or whatever legal justification. It's almost impossible to recover from police officers. It's becoming more difficult to recover from police officers.
There's an interesting thing about that that's happening in Congress. A few years ago, Orrin Hatch and Patrick Leahy, Orrin Hatch wrote the law and Patrick Leahy co-sponsored it in the Senate so that there would be Republican and Democratic support for things having to do primarily with taking this law applying to zoning and environmental concerns. And slowly, year after year, these things have passed the House fairly well. They've always choked in the Senate. This year, Hatch and Leahy have rewritten the law so that it is a property forfeiture law, which will apply to every group of people of every class, apply to all kinds of property. And fundamentally, I have a copy of it somewhere at home that the...
And we are interrupting the tape, as is our fashion, to get a real live person on the line. I think that this is a call from the Santa Cruz Service Corps, is that my mistake? We talking to somebody that in that area?
Yes.
And you are at the moment prefer to remain anonymous?
I do.
Okay, but you had some concerns you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I was a resident down in Camp Paradise last year before they got flooded out when Jeanette lived there, and she was taken out of her tent at 1:30 in the morning, told to leave Camp Paradise and not to return. She said she didn't have no place to go. She didn't have no tent, no sleep bag, no nothing, and he refused to give her any help whatsoever. She was alone, and that was totally wrong. And Larry had all his little bullies standing around him, and Dirt Clod was not one of them, by the way. Mm-hmm. And she started crying, "You can't do this to me. I'm single. I'm you know, it's 1:30 in the morning." He refused to listen to her, and he escorted her off the property. Wouldn't even give her a tent to sleep in.
Mm-hmm.
He said, this is my stuff, this is mine, you're not taking it nowhere.
Now, she alleged that he broke her, or he hit her face with a branch, and that there were 15 people, including Dirtclaw, there with him, or some large group of people. Is that an accurate statement?
No, that's not. You want to talk to Dirtclaw? He's standing right here.
Sure, but were you a witness to this yourself?
Yes, I was, and that was not...
So, was she injured at the time?
Yes, she was.
And what do you think that resulted from, or do you know?
That's when I didn't know what happened on the outside of the camp, on the slashing of the tires and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know she was involved in that, but she admitted it, so, you know, that was after, at 1:30 in the morning, that was what I saw. I just was there to verify that she did not have no place to go, and that's how Larry is.
But you also are telling me that her account that she was struck by Larry is probably not accurate, or
no, that is accurate.
So he did. He struck her then.
Yes.
You saw him strike her.
Yes.
And what did he strike her with?
It was a branch.
I see.
He told her to get out, leave now.
And did he strike her after she attacked him, or
no,
just?
No, she didn't attack him. Not in the tent. Not she didn't have time. She didn't have time to even. She wasn't even awake yet until when he came flying in at her.
I see. I'm glad you're talking about this. It's very serious.
It's very serious.
Yeah, and I guess it's one of the reasons that you said you recently left Camp Paradise, the smaller Camp Paradise, right?
Yes, and now we're all involved in a really good group, and it's going to happen. And anybody out there that has anything to say about all this that was in the past in the camp, you got to come forward and speak up, because this is your right as homeless people not to be abused by these people and the person that we're talking about.
Well, what have you heard recently?
Recently?
I mean, I know that last night I was in a meeting, and you probably were too, of the Santa Cruz Service Corps, where as I was describing, both Larry and Dirtclaw and all the rest of you are kind of agreeing to work together through two separate camps.
Right.
What do you think of that idea?
Well, we're hoping that it works. We're hoping it works. We have our own views and our own ideas that we're working with and talking to him. Thank God he's there. He's like our godsend. He's trying to keep peace in the camp, in both camps. But you just can't live in a camp where there's a dictator. You know, it would have been a Jim Jones Jim Jones all over again with the guy in a tragedy if this would have continued. And you just can't do that. People, they were deprived of their food. We were deprived of all kinds. If you didn't follow his way, that was it. It was no other way. And, like dignity, self-respect, privacy, all that comes in it. And we weren't getting none of that.
So you folks have moved up to Henry Cowell.
We're up at Henry Cowell now. And then we're going to, of course, go to... I can say it, Becky's house for the weekend, and then from there we're going to go back up to Henry Cal for another 7 days, because there is a homeless camping thing saying that you can't stay more than so many days. So
yeah,
and from there we're hoping that another church will open their doors to us, or we could come up with a city park that we could go and stay at until we can find a more permanent place that we're looking for.
Right. Well, did you say that Dirtclaw wanted to say something?
Yeah, Dirtclaw's standing right here.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Robert, how you doing tonight?
Hey, it looks like you're out of jail, Dirtclaw.
Oh, yeah, I'm out of jail.
The last time I spoke to you, you were in the lockup, and you were accused of felony assault with a deadly weapon, and apparently all those charges were dropped.
Yep.
And that Larry dropped them.
Yeah.
As well as the district attorney. And there were several other serious charges, such as sleeping. What were the other charges that you had?
Oh, I had two signing tickets, a failure to appear on one, and an open container.
So pretty serious charges. I mean, drinking, after all, I mean, we know that you're...
As far as a homeless person's concerned, yeah, I guess so.
So anyway, you're out, you have no charges pending, and I guess you were at this meeting last night of the Santa Cruz Service Corps where they voted in the bylaws, and where I guess you and Larry and everybody else all sat down peaceably to kind of work things out. How'd that happen? How'd that go?
It went pretty good. I mean, there was enough respect there for me and the other person to keep our distance, and you know, grant you, that's respect.
Mm-hmm.
It's enough to sit there and be tolerable, but...
I mean, in essence, you have the Santa Cruz Service Corps as sort of as a way of facilitating your use of tools so that you can do the kinds of jobs the community needs and that you need to get paid for that will help you, you know, get on going, right?
Right. Our motivation is to sit there and employ the homeless in any possible way, therefore enable them to become functional people in society. Hopefully that job that we help them acquire will give them enough funds to sit there and afford a high rent income in this county.
No.
I urge everybody out there in radio land, let's get a rent freeze and roll back that rent and until the economic
time. Well, perhaps you'd like to run for city council, Dirt Club.
Not at the present time, and I have to sit there and get my wits up for a couple more months, but yeah, I'd like to. I would.
I know that Steve Argue was on my show last, and he's announced he's running for city council again, the poor boy. So I don't know. Of course, we have the usual candidates. So you heard the latest broadcast with, you know, Jeanette came on the air and spoke about her concerns, and she...
Yeah, I know Jeanette very well. I've talked to her from time to time. She's got her story a little misconstrued, but that's okay. You know, sometimes we just can't accurately remember what took place. I can tell you what took place real briefly on that occasion that night. I was asleep. I was woke up by Larry telling me, you know, I just went up and beat Jeanette's butt and kicked her out of camp, you know, and she's got no reason to be here or anything. So I felt compassionate enough to go find Jeanette to see if she was in danger or anything, because I really don't approve of some of the tactics that Larry does. So I went to where Jeanette was, and Jeanette unfortunately had left that area and went, well, she went down and filed charges on Larry, which is, you know, great. But I wasn't able to see Jeanette at that time after Larry had assaulted her with that branch.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, once again, I don't approve of Larry's tactics of you're out of here, physical force, violence, verbatiousness.
He wanted to get rid of her because she had been drinking in camp, or?
Well, yeah, she'd been outside the camp drinking, and one of the bending of the rules that we had is no drinking, no drugs, alcohol in the camp. If you come home drunk, the smartest thing to do is come home straight to your tent and go to sleep. Otherwise, there was a dunking in the river as a rule.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jeanette came home and she couldn't make it to her tent because Larry had crossed her path, and Larry says, you know, quote unquote, excuse me, I remember this is a free radio station,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bitch, you're drunk, get out of here. And then, you know, Jeanette does stand up for her rights and her own, and she says, I'm not drunk. I've had a couple glasses of wine, but I'm not drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a couple glasses of wine in the state of California, 1.0 is drunk. Two glasses of wine is about 1.3. But, you know, there's a balance there. Some people are functioning alcoholics at that level.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe Jeanette was not drunk that night, and that's why I went out to try and find her, and I wasn't successful in finding her, but the people that she was with when Larry assaulted her with the branch told me, well, she went down to get her face fixed up because Larry beat it up pretty bad, and I felt bad for her because that's not the right way to sit there and take care of business in a society like that, a communal living society, or mm-hmm. society in general.
Well, you know, the obvious question that comes to mind, Dirt Claude, is why, what happened then? Did the police investigate this? What, did the police come down and question Larry?
Yes, they did investigate it. They came down, they asked Larry questions, you know, did you see Jeanette and everything, and Larry, you know, with his smooth impressiveness, said, well, she slashed my tires. Well, she slashed Larry's tires after Larry beat her butt.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she came out with retribution afterwards. It wasn't a before thing. She was thrown out of camp for being under the influence of alcohol
mm-hmm.
by Larry.
Well, the other question is, the members of the camp who saw this and didn't approve must have covered for Larry in some way, and you must have been one of them, right?
No, I didn't cover for Larry. I absolutely did not cover for Larry, and the other people that, per se, you may say that covered for Larry were afraid to speak because they were afraid to be thrown out of the camp also, and they had no other place to go.
Now, were there a lot of violent incidents that happened, or was this a rare occurrence?
Pardon? Can you rephrase that?
Were there a lot of violent incidents that happened, or was this a rare occurrence?
No, it's not a rare occurrence. In fact, you know, I've got a photo album I'd love to show you. Boxing matches down there. You know, if you couldn't sit there and handle your business, we had a boxing ring, and it was known that we had, you know, little matches like that. A lot of fights, but most of the violence came from Larry.
So what's the way to make sure this doesn't happen in your new camp, Dirt Club?
One thing that will enable it not to happen in the new camp is we don't have a dictatorship in the camp.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a dictatorship in the new camp.
How does it work?
What we've done is we've chopped it up in pieces and divvied it out to each, so we all share equally the responsibility of that position. Mm-hmm. Therefore, there's no king.
Mm-hmm. And so how do you make decisions? Do you have a weekly meeting? Or
we make decisions on a daily basis. At the end of the day, we meet together and we talk business. We mm-hmm. talk futures, we talk past, what our goals are. And because once a week doesn't do it. Every day, at dinner time is the best time we do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody's around the table. There's nothing but love and harmony in the camp. We're so glad that we've gotten our harmony back, the ones that decided to break away from him and become of a select few. And mind you, there's not a second Camp Paradise like was quoted in the meeting last night. There's where Larry lives, there's where Dirt Cloud lives, you know, Camp Paradise 1, Camp Paradise 2.
Mm-hmm.
That's really not a reality, because we were trying to break away from Camp Paradise because of the bad publicity that ended up happening. One thing that we're trying to do is salvage what we have conquered and acquired so far and make what we've acquired so far work. And so we believe that we can make that work.
So what are you going to do when, you know, a problem arises in the camp, like someone, let's say, publicly abuses drugs or is engaged in violence or theft in a way that seems continuous? Or in other words, how do you have any sense of how you're going to address these problems? Are you going to use the police? Are you going to use internal discipline? Are you going to make it up as you go? How are you going to deal with it?
We've put together new implements of rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
And excuse my phone for that. Ignore that person. Rehabilitation, and there's right ways of rehabilitation, there's wrong ways of rehabilitation. If you're sick and in danger of dopamine right now, and you want to sit there and get yourself right, you can come to my camp. I'll help you kick. And from that point, man, any time that you need somebody to confide into because you have a problem with drugs, talk to me. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, harsh terms, and that's what we do not believe in. Love is the strongest power in the camp that is now. And it's not a camp of people, it's a family of people.
Mm-hmm. Wow, we've been talking with Dirt Clod, who's, I guess you guys are up in Henry Cowan. If people want to reach either Camp Paradise or your camp, I guess you can do it through the Santa Cruz Service Corps at 423-8636?
Yes, you can.
Uh-huh.
And I must sit there and retract a statement. Our camp, because it's a group of people that decided to become a family.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we would be like one or two people, or I. That doesn't exist there. We're a family, and we realize that the unity of a family. There's a lot of power. God's power exists in a family. We are of His family. Why not sit there and adopt His principles, like He's always told us? Go with my way, and everything's cool. Block our way, man, you got troubles.
So to check out God's principles or man's principles, or just to get some contact with either of these camps or the Santa Cruz Service Corps, you can call 423-8636. Mm-hmm. Anything more, Dirt Club?
Yeah, there's been a few people, man, divulging into the history of where Larry came from, how he grew up, you know, and who he is and what he's all about, because he's really impressed people in this community that he's of such and such. But that's not true. We find out, you know, that his family history and stuff is from youth up until the age that he is right now, is full of violent acts at trying to overpower people to gain material things, if not mostly money. And, you know, these are recorded things, you know, if you wanted to. Check a person's background. If you check this man's background, I'm sure that all of us in this community here would want to sit there and tar him, feather him, and get him out of here. That way, a lot of people would feel at ease and be able to get on with their lives and progress.
Well, I would like to see everybody allowed to live here. Of course, you know, I want to make sure that there's no continuing intimidation by either side. And of course, I don't have any power to do that except to encourage people to, you know, find better living situations. It sounds like you folks all did.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that there is a place for people to go who have these differences with Larry and who feel that they have been abused, they can go to other people to get support now, and I think that's a positive thing.
Well, you know, I love that man as my brother, as being under God and being in God's family. And if I had it my way, what I would do, I would help the man find the help that he needs to have to change his life around and become the person he needs to be. He's hiding behind a mask, and that mask is lie, lie, and lie. until he believes the lie. Now he's living the lie. He'll defend the lie, and he'll die for the lie. Someday, he's got to bring it to a head and say, that's it, I've had enough, I've got to go find some help. And when he's ready to do that, I'm ready to help him myself, for one.
Hey, well, thank you, Dirk Claude.
Much respect.
I appreciate the help, and I appreciate the information, and we will invite Larry to respond if and when we can find him.
You can find him if you want to. He doesn't have a cell phone right now, but if you want to sit there and go to his domain, it's on Park Avenue behind the Mount Calvary Church. Just be polite and respectful when you do sit there and enter that premises, because the church doesn't want to be put in the spotlight. You know, they don't want a gun to their head or anything like that. That church has been very beautiful and credited, and we love that church.
I understand a lot of they're trying to get other churches to do what they've done, which is open up property for folks to camp on.
Well, you know, I need to bring this into the public view right now. There's a lot of money out there for the homeless and for the disadvantaged, and Bush has it. The problem that Bush has, he doesn't know who to divvy the money out to that he can trust that's not going to have the money taken advantage of. And actually, the religious institutions are about the only trustful ones that can possess the money, divvy it out, and make things work, because they go back to the original Ten Commandments, God's law. It's worked all these eons of years. Why should it stop now? Why should we try something new when we know what works always?
I won't get into a debate with you on that one, Dirk Claude. Although I think, well, we'll talk about that at another time. Anything else you wish to discuss?
Yeah, everybody out there, I love you, I respect you, and we need all the support that we possibly can. And if somebody has the cares, call the Santa Cruz Service Corps, because we want to save this, salvage it, and make it work. Get these people off the streets, get them into houses, get them into jobs, and be functional people of society. That's what the American dream is all about, and I'm sure everybody wishes to have it in their own life.
Cool. Thank you, sir.
Much respect. Love you, brother.
All right. Bye-bye.
And the phone number again for the Santa Cruz Service Corps is 423-8636. A phone number for free radio, in case you wish to join the discussion, is 427-3772. We have a caller, and we will try to get a hold of Larry in case he wants to respond to any of these criticisms that have come up or make his own positions known on other issues. We've actually had him on the air recently, as 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Hi, you're on free radio.
Hi, Mr. Norris. My name is Howard Jacobs. I'm a representative of the Los Angeles Cannabis Resource Center.
Thank you for calling, Howard.
No problem at all.
I actually haven't yet given the intro, but as I understand it, we got a media advisory that the community response against the Bush administration's assault on the compassionate use of medicinal marijuana, the unnecessary closure of the LA Cannabis Resource Center, and last Friday's federal forfeiture action to seize the center's building prompted on last Wednesday a response. You want to talk about that?
Sure, be happy to.
Talk up if you can. We got a bad signal here.
No problem. I'll be happy to talk about it.
Thanks.
The membership after Friday's action became very concerned. The federal courts indicted the LACRC, the City of West Hollywood, and Wells Fargo Bank, who are lien holders of the building that the club operates in, and are trying to seize all those proceeds and forfeiture.
How many people did the club serve?
The club served over 900 people. They have 935 members, which means each member will lose approximately $600. And for those who are living on disability, $600 is a tremendous amount of money. In the same respect, too, you know, taking a building away from the membership as a place for them to go for support is also very, you know, very difficult.
Now, when did they come in and begin their crackdown?
The first raid occurred in October, where the club actually was forced then to shut down the distribution of medicinal marijuana, but the club was still able to have members come in and sit and support each other and act as a resource for information. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what the Resource Center was doing.
How do people deal with needing to get their medicinal marijuana? Did they go to clubs in adjacent cities? Did they just hit the streets looking for marijuana?
Yeah, basically what the federal government did is they turned them into criminals. You know, they forced them to go down the back alleyways to try to find medicinal marijuana for their use, and that's, you know, pretty much what club members were forced to do. Some club members didn't have that opportunity, were too afraid, and eight of them have died since that October raid.
And in the year before that, how many club members died, say, in the last year, to get some comparison? Is there a normal attrition rate in the club, or is it?
Well, certainly people living, you know, with HIV disease, unfortunately, and those with cancer and other life-threatening illnesses pass away, but it was, you know, not directly connected with their inability to actually access medicinal marijuana. In fact, what it did is probably prolong their life and added quality to their life.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, the club lost about 2 to 4 members per year.
So you've lost lost aid, and now you said there's been a new act of aggression by the federal government?
That's correct. What the federal government did is that they indicted the actual club itself and the membership, who put down a 10% payment on the building. The city of West Hollywood, who loaned the club money to purchase the building, and Wells Fargo Bank, who provided the mortgage for the building. And they're going to seize the building and the proceeds of the sale of the building, which means that club members lose money, the city loses money, and Wells Fargo would lose their money, treating them just like they would be treating Colombian drug lords, which is, you know, really outrageous. When you think about the terrorist activities that are going on in the Middle East, why is the federal government focusing on sick people in West Hollywood? It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, perhaps they're trying to get a little training in terrorism here.
Quite honestly, you know, not being a member of the club, but being someone who has supported the club, these are sick people who really need this drug to, you know, improve the quality of their life, to deal with the nauseousness that goes with taking, you know, the intense medications they have to take, you know, and they're dealing with pain. These are not terrorists who are flying planes and blowing up buildings.
Well, I know up here in the Northern California area, we've gotten the rather shocking news that the quality of the marijuana that's supposedly being used in the only federal trial of a marijuana that is actually, you know, being and that has been authorized was so low that people were leaving the project. It seemed like the federal government was deliberately trying to provide a bad quality of marijuana so as to drive people away and to discredit the use of marijuana. Any thoughts on that?
That's been my understanding, that the quality of the marijuana that the federal government was providing was incredibly poor, as well as within the clinical trials themselves, the parameters were also very difficult for those who are sick to actually use them, have access to them, and then being investigated. Some of them had to be hospitalized or put into rooms to watch how they responded, and that's not conducive to the quality of life for people living with life-threatening illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so clearly that what they were trying to do was to demonstrate that, you know, or make it very difficult for people to get the benefits of medicinal marijuana, therefore trying to show in scientific studies that it doesn't work. Unfortunately, that's not the case. I think anecdotally we consistently hear stories of, you know, people benefiting from, you know, from the quality of, improving the quality of life with medicinal marijuana, as well as scientific studies that are based at universities.
Indeed, I've been reading, if you check the web for the, recent reports by the House of Commons out of England in the United Kingdom, you find massive support for acknowledging the medical benefits of marijuana as well as the futility of the drug war generally.
Yeah, and you know, clearly the voters of California with their endorsement of Prop 215 feel the same way. You know, these people, again, are sick and dying. They're not criminals. No, they don't belong in jail. They're not Colombian drug lords. We don't deserve, you know, them to take away their building and take away their money.
So in response to the federal government's latest act of terror against essentially helpless patients, what is the L.A., let me get your name of your club right, the LACRC?
The Cannabis Resource Center.
The Los Angeles Cannabis Resource Center. What have you guys been doing?
Okay, there are four members of the club who are going on a permanent hunger strike until the end of the prosecution of the club occurs. Each day we have a guest hunger striker coming in who is hunger striking in support of the club. We're doing press events updates on a daily basis on the conditions of the hunger strikers. We're having a daily rally at 4:00. Each day where supporters of this event can come down and demonstrate as people are driving home during rush hour. And then on this Sunday, we're going to actually be having one of our bigger events where we're going to be inviting elected officials, celebrities, as well as members of the club. And again, there are 900 members of the club who will be coming down for a major rally starting at 4:00 on the corner of Santa Monica Boulevard and Gardner Drive in West Hollywood. There'll be a potluck to introduce the new hunger strike participants, and then a candlelight vigil. And we're continuing to update the press on what is actually happening with the hunger strike participants on a daily basis.
Now, I'm reading here in the last, a week ago, May 31st, in the San Francisco Chronicle, Medical Pot Club closes down after DEA raid, talking about the Santa Rosa closure by the U.S. DEA agents, which closed the Eco Compassion Center on West College Avenue, and then arrested Daniel H. Nelson and Edward M. Beerling, and apparently arraigned them on charges of cultivating more than 100 marijuana plants, carry a mandatory prison sentence of at least 5 years, charged with maintaining a place where marijuana was cultivated, even though Beerling had a certificate from a doctor, which was reviewed by a medical panel established with approval of a local law enforcement, entitling him to grow and use marijuana for his medical condition. It has more than 100 patients, or had, before being served with a 3-day eviction notice by its landlord, who said he'd gotten a letter from a DEA lawyer warning the government that they would seize the property if the landlord didn't stop the illegal activity.
In response to that, which is very similar to the kinds of actions that are happening down here in Los Angeles, is that we're trying to put pressure on our state officials to ask Attorney General Bill Lockyer to file a lawsuit against the federal government, very similar to the successful lawsuit that the state of Oregon's Attorney General did to uphold their assisted suicide law. You know, where is states' rights? You know, and clearly here, you know, the state has overwhelmingly voted to allow for medicinal marijuana use. And there are a number of clubs who have set up, just like the club down here in Los Angeles, and as you described, the club in Santa Rosa, to operate, you know, within the confines of the law, as well as with the cooperation of our local law enforcement. And that's been very successful here. So these people have been operating above, you know, with you know, the cooperation of public officials, yet our federal government is not hearing this. And in fact, what they're trying to do is punish people who've been trying to do everything in the open, simply to try to help people who are sick. Which again, they're turning these people into criminals. These people aren't, you know, the owners and operators of these clubs are not criminals.
How can we, here in Santa Cruz and others across the state who may or may not, and probably aren't listening to this tiny station in Santa Cruz, but who may be hearing about it from other places, what can we do to help, A, the L.A. Club, but also the condition for everyone who, you know, needs access to medical marijuana and has supposedly thought since 1996 in Proposition 215 that we were entitled to that access?
There are really three things, you know, that I think people can do to assist in this effort. One is to contact their state assembly member and their state senator, asking them to jump on board and to contact Attorney General Lockyer, asking him to file that federal lawsuit against the government to uphold Proposition 215 and the rights of our voters. Number two, they can be contacting their elected official in Washington, D.C., asking them also to write a letter to Attorney General Ashcroft, asking him to stop these prosecutions, letting him know that this is a states' rights issue and that the people of California feel that it's very, very important that people who are sick get access to medicinal marijuana. And three, rally in support. Contact the media. Contact, you know, as many people as possible. Have a rally within your own city, you know, and try to generate as much media attention as possible to encourage people to join this effort. And a groundswell of grassroots support is what's needed in order to make these kinds of, you know, changes.
So you're suggesting contact Ashcroft, contact your state assembly person, and contact your local media.
Correct. And not just your state assembly person, you're also your state senator.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there a way that people can give direct support to the L.A. Center? I guess Oakland has also been affected, as well as Santa Rosa, and I guess San Francisco, at least one of the clubs.
We are putting together a legal fund. If people want to send money, that would be, you know, certainly beneficial. The address of the Los Angeles Cannabis Resource Center is LACRC, 7494 Santa Monica Boulevard, West Hollywood, California, 90048.
If anybody wants that number locally, just give a call to 423-HUFF for the address, and I'll give it to you again, 423-4833. You know, this is sort of reminiscent to me, this attempt of the federal government to enforce laws that essentially destroy basic liberties of citizens. Sounds like similar to the Fugitive Slave Act of the 1800s, where the southern states were able to ram through more punitive measures that enabled, you know, federal agents to run in and grab slaves from the northern states and take them back. But the result in the north was rebellions. Juries refused to convict. Have you had any success in juries refusing to convict on these kinds of charges? What's the story with that?
We have not seen any type of jury trial here in Los Angeles that I'm aware of as of yet. In order for the federal government to actually seize the building itself, it will have to be at a jury trial. We will make the assumption that people will uphold, you know, the California rights of our voters and stand behind us.
Has this happened anywhere else in the country that we know of? And how do juries respond to these kinds of federal incursions?
I am not aware of any type of jury trial throughout the country, although others may be. I just don't have that information. I'm sorry.
That's okay. We've been talking with
Howard Jacobs.
And Howard, are your fasters sort of fasting indoors, or are they sitting outside and we get to see them wasting away?
They're doing back and forth. We're actually in the middle of a heat wave here in Los Angeles, and it's been very, very difficult for them to stay out in the tents on a 24-hour basis. So they're rotating themselves back and forth in the building and outside the tent area.
And of course, the old anarchist in me, or I should say the sensible person in me, suggests people just walk outside their houses and light up a joint. That's what we used to do, and shout, free the weed, which is my approach. I don't usually like the surreptitious approach. I understand that medical marijuana is a very particular thing, and I'm a little bit concerned that we allowed this drug war movement to be divided and hoped that we would get some reasonable treatment based on the obvious fact that some people need medical treatment, but we see that that doesn't even happen, does it?
Well, you know, it's the hypocrisy of our federal government. When you sit down and think about it, we're now forcing people to deal with criminals on the street who sell pot, as opposed to doing it in a manner that's, you know, within the open and provides them with dignity. They're forcing these people to be criminals, and they're you know, promoting, you know, a criminal element, as opposed to what's happening here, where people are cultivating their own marijuana and distributing it in a way that was in cooperation with our sheriff's department.
What's the grassroots feeling in Los Angeles? I mean, do you think you have, is there sufficient outrage at this that you actually have large numbers of people who are coming out to support you, people largely apathetic, or people kind of, you know, preoccupied with just enough doing the two jobs they need to get the rent paid? What's...
We began our action yesterday. We had an article in the Los Angeles Times today, and all of a sudden we started to get letters from elected officials supporting us. We have members of the West Hollywood community organizing a major event on Wednesday, and you know, it takes just a few people to start changing what I say the world, and I think we're starting to see that grassroots effort actually mobilize. We can always use more help, you know, and the more people who get involved, obviously the better. You know, people need to act up to help save people's lives.
You said it, brother.
Okay.
Thank you for giving us this whole thing.
We appreciate it.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was a spokesperson down there for the Los Angeles Cannabis Resource Center giving us an update on a fast that has begun down there in response to the Bush administration's assault by closing the Los Angeles Cannabis Resource Center and last Friday moving to seize the center's building. And a little of the background, in October 2001, the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration raided the L.A. Cannabis Resource Center in West Hollywood, effectively ending the safe and legal distribution of medicinal marijuana to sick and suffering patients in the L.A. County area, as allowed under state law. On May 30th, a week ago, federal officials began the process to seize and forfeit the building that houses the community facility. Patients and supporters of the LA Cannabis Resource Center have mobilized to save their own lives and demand the reopening of this important health care program. As a person living with AIDS, I should not be made into a criminal buying pot in an alleyway, endangering my personal safety, said Pete Jimenez. LA CRC board member Mary Lucy added, if patients are going to die in the streets, let the whole world see our faces. That's happened, folks, and it's going to happen here, too, or are we just going to kind of keep a low profile and hope it doesn't happen until it does happen? I've always urged people to mobilize before these things happen. I think the idea of dividing ourselves into the medical marijuana people and then the people who believe in the marijuana should be legal for everyone was a big mistake, and I continue to think that, but... let's stand together, that's what I say. If you want any more information about this, you can always give a call, leave a message on the Huff line, 423-HUFF. I'll try to give you some updates. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. We have about 15 minutes left on this show. We'll be coming back on Sunday at 10 o'clock with more info. And I think we're going to have actually guest Nick Whitehead on the air. Nick is a playwright who wrote the infamous Home Sweet Homeless, which probably nobody out there but me and a few other individuals have heard. It's a fine play, political satire about Santa Cruz politics around the time of the earthquake. He's written another radio play, and he's going to be talking about it on the air on Sunday. I believe it has to do with the homeless. Again, I'm not entirely sure, but he arranged to get together on the air, and we're going to be doing that. There was, at the special city council meeting on Monday, at which ADUs, accessory dwelling units, came up, it was, actually they announced they were going to be looking at it further down the road. The deal with the Clearview Court RV home, the RV park area, fell through. So there was no city council was going to broker a deal where the the RV people were going to be able to buy their spaces from the large LA corporation. Actually, the LA corporation is the one that's dealing with De Anza, but the owners who are taking over the RV park, which is currently rent controlled, at least in part. And the concern I've had and I've expressed on the air is that the city council, which is gutless as far as providing any kind of rent control for renters generally or even discussing the issue at city council, Chris Krohn, get off your butt and do this, thank you very much, is now going to gut rent control for RVs because it doesn't want to deal with the legal fees that it's having to pay to fight to defend its rent control law in court. And that was to some extent what Paul Wagner was talking about, and I guess we can, I'm going to kind of, we haven't got a lot of time left, so I'm going to move on to the next item, but Paul is very articulate on these issues, and hopefully maybe we'll have some time on Sunday to conclude that and continue it. In essence, nothing was decided at this meeting. There was a, I guess, the homeless service center is looking to get a family shelter put in at the place that's currently Santa Cruz Service Corps. That building will be demolished probably by September. But until then, it may well continue as the offices of the Santa Cruz Service Corps. We talked, of course, to some Santa Cruz Service Corps members earlier. There's a Green Party meeting coming up on Saturday. It's open to the public. It's the Green Party Assembly. And it happens at Loudon Nelson Center at 4 o'clock. It goes from 4 to 6, or sometimes a little longer, 6:30. The Green Party is the group that has in its state platform the words that it opposes laws that criminalize the homeless. Unfortunately, it also has in power in Santa Cruz people like Councilmember Ed Porter and Councilmember Tim Fitzmaurice. Fitzmaurice is a Green Party member. Porter is Green Party endorsed, made sworn commitments to the Green Party that he would move to end the sleeping ban shortly after getting into power, and did nothing of the kind and has done nothing of the kind. Activist Thomas Levitt, a Green Party activist, has been moving to try to put in place an accountability process so that people like Fitzmaurice and Porter can be pressured and, if necessary, repudiated by the Green Party, but he hasn't done so yet. I mean, he's trying, but there's this, either it's an endlessly slow process or you have people at the center who are trying to block this. In any case, all I can say is don't contribute to the Green Party, don't join the Green Party, don't help the Green Party until you see it's going to do these things. I guess you might say, well, jump on board and see that it does do these things. But I guess for me, it's more productive to contact Green Party members and say, I'm all ready to join. I want to see you hold these clowns accountable. You know, then I'll join. And they may tell you, well, join up and help us hold them accountable. That's what Jeff Shuey told me 2 years ago at the Democratic National Convention. Well, I did. I joined the Green Party, and their first response was to try to evict me from their committee meetings, to smear me and to attack me, which is fine. I mean, that's the, you know, one takes some of that in public life. But the most important thing is they didn't do anything, and this includes Mr. Shuey and others on the party, to hold people like Fitzmaurice and Porter accountable. They're still not being held accountable, and I'm afraid Green Party members have to be held accountable for not doing that. I mean, that's... You can talk all you want about Ralph Nader, but if you're going to let little Bushites in and who deal with homeless people in the way George Bush does, then I'm afraid you ain't got a Green Party. You may have a nice, stirring bunch of politicians using Green Party rhetoric, but you don't have real Green Party action. There's an interesting dialogue on the internet between Steve Argue, running for city council, a Peace and Freedom Party member, and they have their problems too, and Thomas Levitt of the Green Party, about how to deal with Tim Fitzmaurice and other Green Party renegades. Unfortunately, they're not just Green Party renegades, they're apparently Green Party leaders and heroes, and that's the contradiction and the problem here in Santa Cruz. You can follow a lot of this debate, though, by going to a website. I actually don't have the website name, but simabue@mindspring.com is the email address to contact if you want to get in touch with this website. It's C-I-M-A-B-U-E, simabue@mindspring, one word, M-I-N-D-S-P-R-I-N-G.com. This is a website run by Chris Brozda, who is a passionate homeless activist who I've had many mixed feelings toward over the years, but has done a lot of work putting together a long debate and dialogue on homeless issues. He's sort of, you might call him the left wing of the homeless movement. If you think I'm radical, check out his website. Again, you can get in touch with Simabue mindspring.com. That's not a website, but that is the email address that will enable you to reach his website. He'd be happy to send you instructions on how to get there. Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, has a website. It's www.huffsantacruz, one word, Huff Santa Cruz, small letters, .org. And thanks to Thomas Levitt, and earlier some work from Jeff the Fiddler and Carl Wilson. I think we actually have a website that may soon be functional if it isn't already. I'm always running around, never have much time to look at these things closely. I rush in, get these things ready to put on the air, and rush out. But, hey, it's, again, www.huffsantacruz.org, and there may be ways to access a lot of the Huff documents, which are very, I think, educational. A lot of them have been written by me, by Becky Johnson, and by other Huff members about the history of the homeless civil rights struggle in Santa Cruz. You may notice we've been talking a lot about, not on this show, but in the previous shows, about the attack on homeless people downtown. Benches, bench removal, homeless removal, hippie removal, fencing off the sidewalk, this whole campaign to gentrify the downtown, and then use the specter of homeless violence instead of closing off Mission Street to get rid of the hit-and-run drivers. Of course, they're going after those criminal bicyclists on Pacific Avenue. I'm going to probably be starting to table this weekend in order to encourage people to stop this process of harassment of the homeless and maybe start a process of more public spaces. And I also, as I mentioned, have a trial coming up on the issue of blocking the sidewalk. Sergeant Butchie Baker, on citizen's complaint from Matisse Selman, had me arrested for blocking the sidewalk, for setting up a table in an area that clearly wasn't blocking anybody. So it was, I think, a false arrest. I suppose Baker had a long 28-page infraction report justifying it. He had been videotaping me for hours and apparently anticipating Ashcroft's Unleash the FBI campaign, although I guess this was being done on the basis of a supposed criminal violation blocking the sidewalk. But what I was doing was I was engaging in political activity, registering voters, and encouraging people to boycott the two cafes, Sushi Now, actually three, Alibaba's Cafe, and the low-profile but really very responsible New Leaf Market, responsible in their silence for this kind of process that's going on, this New Leaf Market that everyone regards as so progressive. I haven't spent any money in any of those three places. I encourage you not to. More important, I encourage you to go in and tell those folks, I will spend money in your places as soon as you sit down with people on the streets who you've displaced and find a better way to deal with these problems than letting the Downtown Association, the hosts, the police, the redevelopment agency, and the city council bully people out of Santa Cruz. Michael True, a musician, has been working to get musicians together to go to city council. You can find him giving away literature at the farmer's market. I saw him there yesterday, and I actually did an interview with him, but I don't think we're going to have time to play it on this show. We only have about 8 minutes left before From the Cream to the Dregs, our next show comes on the air with Uncle Dennis. But I will be back, as I said, on Sunday, and we're going to be able to discuss that kind of stuff. I'm going to probably go out on a number of interviews here, again, from the streets. These are from mid-May, which I think continue to be of interest. I think it's always most important when you let folks speak for themselves, and that's what this station is really all about. Before we do that, got an email from Robert Letterman of New York City. And Robert, the Washington Post editorial page actually has an editorial, but let's describe that. Here's what the ruling is. This was a ruling, Robert Letterman versus U.S. A federal appeals court struck down a 30-year-old ban that keeps protesters from the House and Senate entrances of the Capitol, ruling that security concerns do not outweigh First Amendment rights at a building that is a centerpiece for our democracy. A three-judge panel of the U.S. Court of Appeals in Washington unanimously agreed that U.S. Capitol Police regulations violate the right of protesters to gather on the sidewalk on the east side of the Capitol and pass out leaflets or hold signs. We declare the entire demonstration ban unconstitutional, Judge David S. Tatel wrote in an opinion also signed by other panel members, and I'm going to read more about that on Sunday when I come back. Just a quick update, and we're going to be hearing more on this Sunday as well about the case of Hope, the baby Hope, and Mother Chaya Lewis and Father Aaron Francis. CPS still holds their child captive, and we're going to be hearing the a description of what that's all about. They went to court on, I guess it was the 5th, on Wednesday, yesterday, and the court postponed the issue. Again, I was sworn to secrecy, so I am not allowed to report what happened in the court chambers, and I regret that. Although, boy, it's like having a gag over your mouth. It's amazing. All I know is that from the reports I heard from the mother, she had concerns about visitation with the child and breastfeeding that were not met by the court. Again, this is a report from the mother, not from me. I'm not going to report anything that happened at that proceeding because I would be in contempt of court if I did so and be precluded from further participation in those hearings. I was the only person allowed to remain of a supportive group of about 10 people who came to try to be present with Chaya and Aaron at that hearing. And we're going to be talking more about the issue of the Child Protective Services and what they're doing in Santa Cruz and what's happening at this hearing and how you can support them. You can support them immediately now by giving a call to 423-HUFF and giving me your number, and I'll pass it on to them, 423-4833, if you're interested in defending these folks with respect to the Child Protective Services situation. I'd also hope to get a call from Roxana Quistapache, a local activist who has been concerned about just city crackdown on the beaches. You may have read in the Sentinel about the fire circles that are being kind of dumped by the city to try to ban fires on the beaches, and she was going to talk about that, but I think she wasn't able to call in, or perhaps because of the we've got a lot of people on the phones. I went to court and got a postponement of my obstructing the sidewalk case, which I mentioned a few moments ago, the Butchie Baker arrest, where I was actually taken in handcuffs to the police station, even though it was an infraction, which you shouldn't even be taken into custody for. Baker has done this to me 3 times on 3 different infractions, and he's done it, apparently did it to another person. I got an interview yesterday with someone at the farmer's market. He seems to like to do this, which is, I think, interesting. Interesting that the police department and his higher-ups, like Lieutenant Cipone and Chief Belcher, allow him to do this, and that the city council allows this to go on, even though they know it's happening. I certainly informed them about it at oral communications. They couldn't care less. So that will be the 19th that my case comes back to court for arraignment. Hopefully I will have an attorney by then. I believe Chris Fredrickson may be the attorney in that case. I've asked her. I think she's been sympathetic. I'm not sure if her workload will allow that. And then tomorrow, as I said, I will be going over the hill, if I were not over the hill already, to San Jose, to federal court, to take the Santa Cruz City Council to court for a pattern and practice of human rights violations, specifically falsely arresting me for raising my arm in a "why are you acting like a bunch of fascists" salute when they cut off a speaker, as I described earlier in the show. Had this been the only instance when they'd done such a thing, of course, I would have had no interest in doing that, but this is part of a continuing pattern and practice of violations, and I will give you an update. An update on that issue when I come back on Sunday. There will be a piece now, tomorrow, Friday. It's called Peace Friday. It happens every Friday, 5 to 6, at Ocean and Water Streets. I encourage folks to go down there. There are signs available if you don't have them. It's an attempt to stop the next war. Of course, we got the Pakistani-India crisis reaching a boiling point, but we also have Bush's plans to invade Iraq, and, of course, the recent invasions of the Israeli military in the Palestinian areas. So you might want to check that out, 5 o'clock, Ocean and Water Streets. I'm going to sign off now. I hope you'll come back to me on Sunday, and certainly call into Free Radio during the interim and listen to Uncle Dennis's show from the Cream de la Dregs if you want to get a little change from all this chatter. I'm going to be playing some interviews, and Dennis will be setting up. And if you want to catch me off times, give me a call at 423-HUFF. Thanks for being with me.
3:40, we're down here on the Pacific Concrete Mall in front of the old Cooper.
Cooper House, a man who's drumming, and another man who is just...
Drives a Harley.
Drives a Harley. What can you say?
They call it AJs. We got my boggles.
Hey. We have musicians need love too, says the sign here. A little cash doesn't hurt either. Support the arts. All donations accepted. Is this your sign, sir?
Yes, it is.
You are a man of the drums.
Yeah, among other things. I play bass and guitar as well. I'm really an all-around musician, runs in my family.
And are you inside or outside?
I am outside.
Thank you, guys.
Take care, man. Hey, nice meeting you, bro.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, I live outside, sleep on the river, and I'm just a hitchhiker, camping out.
I think we talked earlier. Did you get hassled by police in the last couple weeks?
Yeah, a little bit. Not much. Only because there are some spots where people complain because the drum is so loud. And there are other spots where people don't. So I've just gotten to know those spots.
So you haven't, just in front of the Cooper House, you haven't found yourself bothered?
Not at all. Not at all. This spot that I'm at right here, pretty much all the way up to the corner by I don't know what that, crossing the movie theater. I don't get much hassle there, but literally if I go right across the street, the people complain from the hotel, and if I go anywhere down there, somebody complains because they always ask me to move.
How are the cops on the beat in terms of other folks? You find them good, bad, or indifferent?
I don't know. They seem to have kind of a bad attitude, but they pretty much ignore. You know, but you can tell they have a bad attitude. I mean, they're not really like, hey, how's it going? They're kind of walking around with this, grumpy look on their face.
How about the hosts? How are they?
The hosts? What do you mean?
In purple with a little, uniform tie.
I say hi to them, and they say hi to me, and that's about it. I don't do the things that would make them tell me not to do stuff, like being too close to a place or whatever. There's some rules that you have to follow as a street musician, and I know what those rules are, and I follow them. That's all. Keeps me out of trouble.
Anything you want to say for free radio?
Music is the best thing that's ever happened to me, and it feeds me and clothes me and keeps me warm at night, and I hope everybody can enjoy it.
Drum on.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. We're on the mall here in front of the King and I. It's about 15 to 5.
Mister, we're ready. Where's the announcer, man?
Ladies and gentlemen, John Mayle.
Yeah, I'm going to
tell you again, John Mayle.
That's right. A little more light over here so you can see who's here. That's it. No, that's better. Yeah. Over here. On my left, Johnny Armand on tenor, alto, and flutes. And sitting down playing acoustic fingerstyle guitar, John Mark. Bass, Stephen Thompson.